The following program is brought to you with limited commercial interruption.
Today's broadcast is being simulcast in broken English.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Time to wake up!
Hey, what are you doing here? About to go on the air!
Uh-oh.
Get out of bed. Resistance is futile.
Back to reality.
I love that show.
It's very hip to be on the show.
We ain't one at a time in here.
They broadcast me out on the radio. We're mass communicating.
Best show since... no other show.
I absolutely love you. You're thoroughly entertaining.
Get ready to taste some sweet ear candy.
Okay, here we go.
It's showtime.
Gentlemen, this is The Cue.
Let's get down to business.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
Gentlemen, welcome to The Cue, of course. My name is Mark Bland, and you are listening to the best pop culture, current events, current affairs show with a political twist east and west of that Mississippi River, hailing from the great city of St. Louis, Missouri. Let me rephrase that. The volatile city of St. Louis, Missouri, right here in the Midwest. Thank you so much. You are listening to us on 1380thex.com, as well as 1420 WINI, and worldwide at theqnow.com. That's where you can find us every single week. And this is a unique show. There's a reason why this is a unique show. And let me preface it. We have a special show because we are going to have an open discussion, ladies and gentlemen, a very honest discussion about racism and black-white relations in the St. Louis area and throughout the country. First, we are joined by a local podcaster who hosts Straight Out of Low Cash, a civil activist and a friend named Daryl Frierson, a.k.a. Dig Game. Daryl is black and, like myself, has spent a majority of his time growing up in and around North County, where the city of Ferguson resides. Daryl Frierson, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me on again, Mark.
I appreciate you coming in to talk to us. Now, next, we have a special guest, a former MAST member of the famed Saint Lunatics. He hails from Wellston, Missouri, not far from the situation in Ferguson. His name is Corey Slowdown Edwards. Corey, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me. Yeah, it was a pleasure.
I really appreciate it. Now, let's get into this. And you might want to put that phone down because we're going to get deep, bro. I'm telling you, we're going to get deep. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in a, I said volatile. Volatile would be the best word to use at this time. There is a lot of protesting, a lot of rioting, a lot of police presence, a lot of protesting, a lot of everything going on in the small city of Ferguson, right outside of St. Louis. And it's technically not even really, to us, it's outside of St. Louis because we think of downtown St. Louis and then like the counties and stuff like that. So, right. But to everybody, it is St. Louis, Missouri. I mean, it is a part of St. Louis County, north of St. Louis County. And I've been kind of pissed. Let me be honest with you guys. We're going to get deep, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight's show is going to be interesting because, what, you okay? You all right? I can hear it. I can hear you're moving.
I'm groovy.
You're groovy?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You done? Mm-hmm. You tell me when you're ready.
I'm ready.
All right, good. All right. Anyway, we're going to have a very open discussion about racism tonight. Gentlemen, I brought these two gentlemen here specifically for two main reasons. One, Dig Game, Daryl. Like I said, he's big into civil activism. He is a very intelligent young man who I've had on the show before. He's extremely opinionated and he has a lot of conviction to what he says and he's smart. He understands what he's talking about. He doesn't speak out of turn. And I appreciate that because it's very difficult to find people like that in the United States, as well as Daryl is black. And we are going to have a very open white-black discussion, whereas Daryl and Corey, on the other hand, you are a former member of the St. Lunatics, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You are the masked man, as they like to say.
Yeah, the silent hype man.
The silent hype man who traveled the world with his crew, and you've been everywhere.
Yes, sir.
You've seen probably protests in other countries. You've seen crazy stuff go down on tour with you and Nelly and everybody else in the crew.
Of course.
Like, you've been around.
Yes,
and you're
sir.
From a very relatively volatile area in Wellston, in the St. Louis area. Let's be honest, you know?
Correct.
Wellston is not what we would consider the Angels playground, let's just say. It's not the Angels playground. And so from there, you achieve heights of success with Nelly and the St. Lunatics as a member that other people will potentially never, ever get to see in their own life, career. And congratulations, and we appreciate you coming on the show today. Because you have that dual side as a black gentleman yourself. You have that dual side of being in the streets, being in the hood, having that part of your life, and then seeing the other side. Mm-hmm. Like, whereas you walk into rooms, like now, as opposed to getting profiled because of negativity potentially, correct, you're looked at as, oh my God, this is one of the guys. I want to get his autograph.
Let me get a picture.
Let me get a picture. I want to be around this person. And so I'm sure that you have a very unique perspective across the board from both ends. And tonight's show, ladies and gentlemen, and today's show is going to get prejudice. We're going to get racial. Mm-hmm. We're going to get deep. We're going to have the most honest discussion in the United States of America right now on the queue between me and these two gentlemen. Now, it takes a special person. I'm not going to toot my own whistle. I'm just saying it takes a special person of the white culture who has to have a background with the black culture to go down this alley. Because just any random white person walking down this alley, they're not going to know where the potholes are. I know exactly where the potholes are, and I'm going for those potholes. They're going to walk into that pothole because they're just prejudiced, because white people tend to be prejudiced, black people tend to be prejudiced, and they're just going to say things without having background to it and without having like credible sources and information to back up why they're saying what they're saying. I, on the other hand, am not that individual. I've been around the music business, especially in the hip hop world, for many years, 20 plus years. I have a strong background in the urban and black community. So I understand the problems that these guys see because I've been with friends of mine who have had these problems and I've witnessed them with my own eyes. Mm-hmm. At the same point, I am white. I've grown up with a white family. I hang around pit fires in North County, drinking lots of beer sometimes with a bunch of people that once enough beers get into them, all that, I love black people, that goes out the window. Mm-hmm. And it becomes the N-word this, and it becomes the blank this and that. And regardless of whether it makes me comfortable or not, it doesn't matter. I'm in that situation regardless, and I've seen it and heard it 1,000 times. Now that happens. That also happens on the black side too. When black people get around other black people and the white people ain't around, they get prejudiced too. Like, they throw their own versions of the same stuff out there. You know what I'm saying? There is this culture that we have. And I have some questions, okay? But I asked you guys to open your mind and listen to us discuss black and white viewpoints and issues in the deepest, most direct way possible. This could possibly get heated and emotional. I will say that if you are bothered, we apologize, but the situation needs to be discussed by smart men with background and understanding. It is time. This Michael Brown situation and the rioting and protesting that has since happened for the last 10, 15, whatever days, has been opening a can of worms that has been an undertone. That was the catalyst, but the undertone of black-white relations, specifically police that are white, to black men and young black men, as well as just black-white relations as an undertone, have been present this entire time.
And also in St. Louis as well. That's even a deeper issue in itself that has been sitting there festering in St. Louis and Missouri as a whole.
Well, guess what? I got a razor blade. I got a bottle of alcohol. I got some salt. And we're going to cut that festering wound open, and we're going to dump as much crap into lemon juice as we can.
All right.
We're going to get deep, guys. And I don't want to make either one of you gentlemen uncomfortable. If you feel uncomfortable, or if there's something you don't want to talk about, or you feel that we're going over the line, please, please let us know.
Only things I want to talk about is Prince and Michael Jackson.
Do you want to talk about Prince and Michael Jackson?
No. The people get real emotional about Prince, Michael Jackson, and religion.
Oh, wait. Which Prince by versus himself or Prince Michael Jackson?
No.
There's Prince Michael Jackson, right?
No, Prince Michael versus Jackson. Michael Jackson.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the kid.
No, Blanket's
got problems with his brother. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is getting deep,
no,
man.
Prince
is
like,
Blanket,
Jackson,
what's your deal, man? You know? It's just out of control. Okay. Let's talk about this, all right? And if we're going to go in, guys, I'm going in guns blazing.
All right.
All right? You ready?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
What the F is wrong with your people, man? Seriously. Right now.
I mean, that's a overarching question. That's not a That's not a question.
Well, actually, right now,
I wouldn't answer that question. That's not a question. Give me something specific.
Of course you wouldn't answer that question because you're going to try to play that line. But that's fine. Because
no,
here's
that's
the thing.
Not playing
you
a line.
You understand that right now there's a section of the St. Louis area that is literally beating themselves to death. They are fighting tear gas canisters. They're mm-hmm. fighting the police. They're fighting each other. They're shooting each other this past week. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's out of control. And in as much as there's maybe, let's say there's 2,000 people down there, right?
Mm-hmm.
1,700 might have the best intentions in the world.
I say more than 1,700. I've been down there multiple days. More than 1,700.
Sure, but I'm just saying, let's just use the number 2,000 is what mm-hmm. I'm saying. Yeah. Let's say there's 2,000 protesters at one time, right? Okay.
No, I'm saying within your 2,000
1,700.
I would say 1,900. Because there's a lot of anarchists that are coming in from Chicago. These Chicago communist movements, these other anarch movements that have came in town. No. They've been here from the beginning.
Oh, they were there the day the Quick Trip burned down?
Sunday. Yeah.
No.
You want to make a bet?
No way.
You want to make a bet?
No way.
All right.
No. It happened the day after.
No.
It happened the night after.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. It wasn't like the shooting happened on Saturday, and then all of a sudden, black people who are anarchists and white people who are anarchists and all these, like, they literally are like, oh my God, some black kid got shot by a cop in St. Louis, got to get on a plane tonight so that I can be there by Sunday when they're going to burn the Quick Trip down. That was a visceral reaction.
I'm not talking about
black community.
What you're seeing now,
directly by Canfield.
What you're seeing now, over the last week and a half.
Yes, I will agree.
That one day, yes, but everything after that has been a lot of different
things. But we have to go back to the first day. We have to go back to the first day because that was the visceral reaction.
Yeah, it was a lot of stuff that egged that on that first day. Mm-hmm. Police dogs, calling people dogs, animals.
Animals, yeah.
I mean, just today.
They put beams on people.
Yeah, I mean, just today you've seen an officer get suspended indefinitely.
Oh, for the FU?
Yeah.
Telling the people I'll kill you and all that?
Not just FU. He said,
he put the gun on people.
I effing kill you. And they asked him for his name, number, badge
go
number.
Go F yourself,
said,
yeah.
What's your name? Go F yourself.
Yeah.
Mr. F yourself. So there's a lot of that stuff that hadn't been recorded. Actually, it was recorded of being called
animals. Yeah.
The dogs been legged.
But here, let's talk about that a little bit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I hope everybody out there listening is just not like, listen to this white racist host, Mark Bland. He's such a piece of... No, I'm going to play devil's advocate, and I'm going to play the white side of this because that's what I am. I am white. Even though I understand that, and slow down. He's been around a lot of white people in his music career. He understands the white aspect, too, just like Dig does. But, like, they're going to take up the reins for their culture, and I'm going to take up the reins for our culture. And I'm not here, first off, just to let you know out, I'm not here to justify the police officer, to justify Michael Brown. I'm not taking one side or the other on that case whatsoever. We are going to talk about black-white relations in general, okay?
Gotcha.
We're not going to talk about who we feel is to blame one way or the other. Regardless of if that was the catalyst, we're not going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. We might hit it a little bit here and there just to get these two gentlemen's opinion of the situation. But beyond that, I don't want that to be the focus because I think that it's deeper. But if you're acting like animals, okay? This is any animal, okay? You're mm-hmm. black men. You see a white person being stupid, walking into a movie theater, pulling out an M16 and blowing away 20 people, okay? You're going to call him an animal.
No.
You're going to call him a piece of trash.
No. You know what they call him? They call him mentally disturbed,
sure.
Right? Or his parents weren't there for him, giving enough hugs.
Right.
They don't call him an animal. That's a different situation between these people protesting.
I heard him once called a guy that went into the movie theater an animal.
Well, fair enough. Like, I'm just saying, like,
but there is a different
the potential for that.
But there's
is
a different description when it comes to black people being portrayed as criminals and when white people are portrayed as criminals in the media or period on people's eyes, period. When that guy killed Newtown, he had Asperger's and he had all these different things, but these people here, they're just animals and that's just the way they're raised and that's the way they are.
Well, what about Christopher Dorner, the former LA police officer who goes on the rampage?
Man, the personal diehard man.
Oh, yeah. But he was crazy. Right?
Yeah.
We don't call him an animal.
But
we're just going to say he's mentally disturbed because he was.
What some people look at him is like, man, maybe he was a whistleblower and just went crazy.
It's possible. There's a lot of possibilities.
His wife might be flipped out on him earlier that day.
Then he just sent him over there. I don't know if he was married or not. I want to say he was single for some reason because he had an apartment and he left it to go up into Big Bear
where they eventually burned it. What I was getting at with that was a person's day can dictate action, a 5-minute action at night or a 5-minute action in the middle of the day. But like some of these officers, you don't know what they're going through.
Yeah.
Right.
Might have some repossessed, might didn't get what he wanted from his wife, kids disrespecting him. It's all kinds of other issues that come up when they on duty. Because, like, I work. I have a 9-to-5.
Right.
Or like a 12-to-12. But,
fair enough.
I mean, in my day, I mean, if I go to work in with a
bad attitude, you're just going to be unhappy.
With some on my mind, yeah, or just some on my mind, it might dictate the first couple of hours. It might dictate the first couple of hours or hour that I'm at work. You know what I'm saying? But by me being at work so long, it might fade away. But if I get to work and something else at the at my place of employment ticks me off, it'll keep escalating and escalating to the point that my job is to talk to people all day long. So
right. So now that attitude kind of comes through a little bit, mm-hmm, and the people can see that.
I have to find myself shaking it a lot.
Okay.
So I can understand. This is one of the reasons why I probably chose not to be an officer of the law. I mean, it was times in my life growing up that I wanted to be a police officer. I wanted to be in the military. I wanted to go fight for our rights until Desert Storm happened. I don't know if I'm telling my age.
No, you're fine. You're okay.
But when Desert Storm happened, that kind of changed my mind and my output of becoming in the military or whatnot.
I understand.
Because before that time, my childhood to that time, it wasn't really nothing going on that kind of scared me from being in the military. So same thing with police officer. I know I'm kind of a disciplinary when it comes to my kids or whatnot, and or kids I'm watching. But I am also a lover when it comes to my kids 90% of the time. But if you deserve to do something wrong. So I know they go through a lot of training to know how to dictate situations and things like that. So it's kind of hard to put yourself in a police officer's shoes.
Fair enough.
And I have a lot of police officers in my family.
Sure.
They all pretty much work in the city. My grandfather was a chief of Pine Line or high up, or I know he was in Wellston for a while before he passed. So I have a lot of members of my family that's on the law side of the streets.
All right. I want to talk about some stuff because there's some things that are on my mind. Okay. Mm-hmm. First off, what's your opinion of, let's just start off here. We only got about 5 or 6 more minutes before we hit the bottom of the hour, but what's your opinion in general? You're deep, you're prejudiced. I want your prejudiced opinion. I want your opinion of white people. When you go home at night and you lay your head down on the pillow and what you see throughout the day and you've seen over your life, what is your honest opinion of white people? And be totally honest. We're not going to hold it against you. This is the place.
I have no beef with white people in general.
Do you feel that they're racist?
No, not all white people are racist. By no means.
Do you feel that they tend to show their racism more often than not?
It depends on who you're talking to. I totally just sweep over white people and say that.
Sure.
I will say that.
Don't be afraid because I'm carrying the torch for them.
No disrespect to Tourette's.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like, it might pop out like in a Tourette's type of
racial Tourette's.
Yeah, racial Tourette's.
Versus... Do you think there's any justification for the attitude white people have towards black people?
No.
Why not?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Okay, go ahead.
I would say that one thing I do think about daily and constantly is white privilege.
Sure.
That's something I do think about, and I constantly.
What do you consider white privilege?
It's the you can look at the situation with the cop and the young boy. That's white privilege in itself.
Oh, is it white privilege?
100%.
We haven't even gotten to the.
But we haven't even gotten to the case, and it hasn't been verdicted out.
We don't even know.
I'm just saying in general that we can look at how many times that there's been a white kid or white male shot by the police, and look if you go on YouTube and look at situations where you have white kids. It's like, well, you know what, fucking cop, you know what, blah 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 blah, blah, and they pop off. Ain't no black guy running up on the police doing that in general. We are almost certified paralegals. We're almost certified paralegals when it comes to the cops.
Yeah, I just
we have
video.
To know.
I just seen a video of a white guy getting arrested by two cops. Well, almost attempted to arrest
him.
Yeah,
that's the video I'm talking about. where he just ran down his rights him. And everything.
Yeah, he sung a whole song and got up and said, "I'm not resisting arrest. I'm resisting your I forgot the words he used."
Yeah, he just broke down all this law.
Do we know
nothing.
Exactly where that happened though?
Absolutely don't.
Because I'm guaranteeing you this, whether you're black or white, if this situation with a Michael Brown type situation would have gone down in, I don't know, Clayton, West County, over by Parkway North High School,
Ladue,
it would have not gone down the same way. It just wouldn't have. Because there's a different vibe for the police officers of the people they deal with on a day-to-day basis versus the Ferguson police officer
But how would he have something to deal with if Ferguson didn't have a murder until he was killed? So it can't be that much high crime. They didn't even have a murder until he died.
And correct me that's what I was going to say too. Correct me if I'm wrong. From January 1st to this point, I don't think had been a murder.
No, that he was the first murder in Ferguson this year.
First off, we need to put people on point because Ferguson's not a horrible or bad area.
Right.
That's the first thing we need to let everybody know. Yeah. Yes. Do they have rough areas like the Canfield? That is kind of a rough area over there.
Yeah.
Where anything down that West Florissant, Lucas and Hunter's Chambers corridor, mm-hmm. that can get really rough over there.
I actually lived over there for quite a few years.
Anything over there by
subdivision next to Canfield. And you got Oakmont, all three of those subdivisions pretty much sit behind Quick Trip. I was in the Northwinds area for about maybe six, seven years.
And I had
years.
A really good friend who went to Riverview High School, grew up off of Lang right there.
Oh, yeah,
I know exactly, and I've hung out on Lang many a time growing up, okay? So, I get it. But I don't want people to get the wrong idea. But at the same point, I think we have to think about the fact that the police are not out to kill young black people. That's the number one thing I want to put out there. I said it on the last show when we had Dan Isom on, and I'll say it again. This idea that it's just the white racist pig cop looking to take out the young black unarmed teenager who just is black because he's black, I'm white, I'm going to kill him. That is not the truth across the board.
I would say any reasonable person would agree with you on
that. But the problem is we have a lot of what we would consider reasonable people in Ferguson tonight, right now. That are protesting that don't think that.
Well, I don't think it's a black or white thing. More so is that once you put that badge and that blue on, or whatever color you at, brown, as long as that badge on, it's like a superhero.
I was just going to say superhero slash villain
all in one.
But I don't think it is. I think, this is one of the things that I think, and we're going to be hitting the break here in a minute, but I think this is one of the unique situations where people think that they think racism first, self-interest second. And I think police officers, for the most part, are looking for self-interest first, and then racism is a distant second in their mind. Because they're constantly walking up to windows. They're constantly knocking on a car window at night in an area they might be uncomfortable with themselves because it's dark out. You don't know who's in the car, what they're going to do in the car. They're going to profile. They're going to profile, and there's nothing wrong with that. Because they're making sure that they protect their CYA. Yeah.
We profile all day long.
Yes.
As human beings, we all profile all day long.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that in this case, because they wear a badge, that profiling is not acceptable. And that's bullcrap.
But I will say this, though, in a small area like Ferguson, you should know your community more as well, though. They should be more with it. Obviously is not in the community because he would know who's such and such in the area. You know the different people in the area and how to conduct yourself with them if you're really policing the people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm from Wellston. We knew a lot of officers by first name basis. The officers knew a lot of people in Wellston by nicknames and government names. I mean,
it's
a big difference.
Hold that thought there. We're going to take a quick break here on the Cube. When we come back, more with Corey Slowdown Edwards as well as Daryl Frierson and myself. Check us out at thecubenow.com. Old episodes, new episodes, a little bit about ourselves in the show. You're checking us out on 1380 The X and 1420 WNI. We'll be back right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the queue. Of course, Mark Bland, joined today by former member of the St. Lunatics himself, Corey Slowdown Edwards. Corey, you doing okay over there?
Yes, sir.
We've been getting a little deep here, man.
Yeah.
We're getting a little edgy here, as well as Dig Game, Daryl Frierson of Straight Out Low Cash. Yeah, where can they find Straight Out Low Cash?
They can go on iTunes. They can also go on Stitcher Radio, as well as go to straightolc.podbeam.com and check it out.
There it is. Definitely, definitely, definitely. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are in the midst of a volatile situation here in the St. Louis area over in Ferguson. A lot of protesting over the Michael Brown shooting. And we are having a very open discussion today about race, racial relations, and racial tensions that have been plaguing the St. Louis area. I mean, I have been as a white person, I'm going to say something that's going to not make a lot of other white people happy, okay, in the St. Louis area. And I don't think that this is just a white people thing. I think this is a St. Louisans thing. St. Louisans have a very passive aggressive attitude and are not very friendly towards other people being successful at all. That is one of the things I will say. Whether you're a music artist, whether you're a movie star, it doesn't matter. You have to always leave, become successful. Athlete, you have to leave, become successful. Then when you come back, it's, oh, we always knew you were good. We were your buddy. Like, it's the crabs in the bucket mentality. And then when you add in a racial undertone to that, it just doubles on top of itself. It becomes a situation where I just don't want to see you be successful. And the fact that you're black makes it okay for me to feel that way. You know, or because I think you're white and you know, you've been doing this for hundreds of years in the United States, I'm going to use that as my benefit to knock you down myself. You know what I'm saying? Like that, that's the way I look at it. Guys, I've got a few questions here. And this one's going to be a tough one for you guys, okay? This one's going to hit you below the belt. You're not going to like this one. I need black people to stop assuming they're 100% right. I need this right now. Hell, I do tons of research on everything constantly, gentlemen. And I ain't even hedging bets on this Michael Brown situation, okay? The truth is, a majority of white people, they're not hedging their bets either. All right. So we're just going to wait for the info to come out. But that's not the case with the black community. This is like L.A. riots, Rodney King. 8 months later, after the fact, once the jury trial came and said not guilty, that's when they rioted. They waited until after the fact to say, we legitimately have a reason to riot here, or we have a reason to like protest and overreact at this level. That's not going on in the United States of America right now. And that's definitely not going on in Ferguson. They jumped on that real fast. And that's a problem. Because anyone who's smart knows, don't count your eggs until they hatch.
I would disagree with that.
Sure, go ahead. Why?
I would disagree with that.
Sure.
You have to look at the tone of where America's been going now. You had the Trayvon Martin situation, the Jordan Davis situation, the Eric Garner situation, the Troy Bell situation. There's so many situations that bred up to this, not just
whoa,
for
whoa,
St.
Whoa,
Louis.
Whoa.
No.
You need
feeling.
To calm down for a second there, homie, because we have a problem. We got a problem.
Go ahead.
You rattled off like five. And right. Even if you rattled off the entire list of situations you're talking about, they're going to probably equal, let's just be generous, 1,000 situations since, I don't know, a year ago at this time. Over the last year, probably 1,000 situations of egregious stuff we're talking about, okay? Out of 300 million people, 300 million people, 1,000. That's less than 0.01%.
But I think that's what's only caught on video.
Good point.
No, well, possibly. I mean, that's potential.
No, I think that's mostly.
But even if it was 5,000, compared to 300 plus million people, do you see my point? Like, we're not even talking about, and not all those situations are death. Mm-hmm. Not all of those situations are death. Some of those situations are just egregious overreaction of a white person on top of a black person, a white police officer on top of, you know, and in some cases, a black police over on top of somebody else. Like,
no, it's just
in general.
That's why I say it's not a color. It's more so once you get that badge.
But the problem is, guys, it's at 300 million people. And if it was so obvious and it was so constant, it would be happening at a level much higher than what we're talking about.
We have to be at a million.
I think I just seen stats 2 days ago where it said a black guy's shot by a police officer
every 28 hours. A black person is shot by a cop.
Now,
every 28 hours. Them
numbers pretty high.
Let's be honest. We both know that not every police officer wakes up every day going, I can't wait to shoot a person today.
Of course not.
Much less black or white.
Right.
That's just not the case, okay? And in most cases, if an officer is going to pull their gun, they never just, like, in the minds of people in Canfield, okay? When that situation first popped off, I have to believe, and this is my personal opinion, they're in their minds thinking, A police car comes screeching in, sirens going, lights blaring. The cop jumps out. He rolls. He pulls out his gun on two innocents and just starts firing like it's a movie.
That's not the case.
Never the case. There's always a catalyst. There's always a reason for the interaction to begin. Most cops aren't looking for a negative interaction because, let's be honest, most cops, they just don't want to have to deal with BS. Hey, Dig, you wake up every morning. Do you like dealing with BS?
No.
No, you don't. How about you, Corey? You like dealing with BS?
I definitely don't, but I think it's more so like not all police officers, but it's a nicer percentage of them that want to. It's like disciplining your kids. If your kids don't do what you say do when you say do it, it's a good chance they get a whooping or a punishment.
Well,
so
yeah,
it's kind of the same way with the cops.
But see, that's the point of the cops.
One cop on CNN just said he got a book out. I don't know if he's an ex-cop or whatnot, but his comment was, "If you don't want to get hurt by the police or something like that, do as I say." Like, yeah, what kind of
who
mentality?
Are you?
And I mean, he has a
book
out.
But that's the point. We put these people in this position to protect us. See, like, here's the thing.
We actually don't.
Where do you think? Let's go down this road. Let's go down this road, okay? Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, mm-hmm. Black gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go down this road.
They're supposed to be in that position.
Where do you think the end game for the protesting in Ferguson is? Do you think for a second they're going to protest, let's say for the next 2 straight months, and all of a sudden out of nowhere, Barack Obama and Eric Holden and all these people are going to show up and they're going to go, you know, maybe we were wrong. You guys have been out here protesting for 2 solid months. This is so egregious. I think you're right. I think what we're going to do is just shut down all the police forces. We're going to let St. Louis self-control themselves when it comes to.
I don't even think about the government, though. Tupac had a line. The power is in the people, and the politics we will address. The people address the politics. No one cares about what Barack Obama does if he comes out. It's about the people, and the people.
What do you think the end game is? What do you think it is?
What do you think is going to be achieved? That's actually something that we're working on now. That a lot
you're
going
to have to work on. You got an end game.
And my opinion is that.
And if you don't have an end game, then you don't have a reason to riot.
Is the end game of reform for the policemen? Like, for instance, in Rialto, California, they have policemen with cameras on them. It took down 80% of the amount of people that were that filed suits, and also took down 70%
of. Do you think that would have mattered in this case? Honestly,
100%.
Oh, you think so?
Not this case, but a lot of other cases.
No, 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 not this case.
No, no, no,
not the case with the black police officer, black child getting shot by the white police officer.
But we're talking. But the situation like this wouldn't have brewed to the point where people would want to riot if you didn't have people getting beat up by police. And if you even go even farther though, with the McCullough, even as a prosecutor, 2 people got killed the Jack in a Box. Didn't even by a cop. Didn't even prosecute.
Daryl,
things like these would not
happen. At the end of this case, they could come out with damaging evidence that basically states the police officer was right. And they could prove it to the parents, to Dorian Johnson himself, to everyone who's been involved, to every person who broke into anything or rioted or got shot with tear gas. And at the end of those things, do you know what? It won't matter. Because it was originally predicated on the idea that it does matter. Yeah, the truth does matter, but now the truth doesn't matter because they've already said it's not about Michael Brown and it's not about
I think
webcams would have definitely helped in the situation because if we could see what this tussle was about that was in the car door. That was in the window of the car door. If he reached for a weapon or if he pulled him in and he was trying to yank away, I think badge cameras would have definitely helped a lot in this situation. But like I said, this situation right now, where they protest for 2 months, the end game is in the voting booth.
Yeah,
that's where we got to end the game at, in the voting booth.
But the voting booth doesn't change the police officers. Police officers don't get voted in.
But if you change...
What's
my guy named?
The
prosecuting attorney?
McCullough.
McCullough, if he was voted out...
Wait. What? That's the next move. Next story. Let's discuss this.
No.
What's the problem with McCullough?
He's never, ever...
What's he done?
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
Never, ever convicted a police officer.
No, charged. Not even charged.
He's only had one up for it ever, and what? That one got
the Jack in the Box.
It's only been one in his entire career. It's not like he's got 10, and all 10 got off. Like, it's only been one in one time. Like, we can't sit there and knock the man for that.
That's for killing, though. He's had a lot of the situations with cops beating up people as well that have not been thrown out.
And I'm not sitting here taking one side or the other. I got to play devil's advocate.
But I'm telling you, and keep in mind, McCullough's dad was killed by a black man as well. So you have that. A lot of that taints the process.
We need to stop that.
That.
We need to stop
that. And his dad was a cop as well.
We need to stop that.
I mean, honestly,
that's got to stop, man. We've got to stop this whole, hey, the white man had a problem one day with a black guy, or vice versa.
Even if it was a black man that was a prosecutor, and if someone, his dad was killed by someone, I would think that would taint him. It's not even a racial thing with that.
The problem is, we're not voting. He won by a long slide. The years he's been in office, 23 years?
Yeah, something like crazy.
He's been winning by a long slide all the time, but the problem is we're not voting. I'm pretty sure it's another capable person that can take that seat. So the problem is we're not voting. And, I mean, the numbers he went by are tremendous, but we're not voting. I mean, it's just simple as that.
I think that there's a distinct social hierarchy problem within the black community. That's where I think the crux of this begins.
I'm interested to see what you say.
You're going to love what I got to say because this is some of that Harvard crap. You know what I'm saying? This is some of that high-level crap. If you break down groupings within black culture, you'll come to realize the people focused on as the face of your race in the U.S. tend to be the lowest on the cultural totem pole for your own rankings. Let's look at it this way, ladies and gentlemen. We've got normal black people and normal white people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got those people that what I would consider, let me go down this road, Wigger. Okay?
Yeah.
They got Wigger. And then the N-word-ish black people. And then you got the full N-word style black people, just straight up.
Yeah.
Okay? And then you have white trash.
Right.
Okay. Now, here's where the social hierarchy problem plays in. Okay? In the white culture, the honey boo-boos, the white trash, the people of Walmart, the fat slob idiot morons, they are made fun of. The ones that are slobs and idiots and morons and they live in trailers and are white trash are made fun of. And the normals make fun of them, which puts them technically at the bottom, and they are not the face of white culture. The face of white culture is the middle class and the upper class. Those are the two faces of white culture. No one looks at white culture and goes, it's obviously Bernadette who lives over in the trailer park smoking a pack of Marlboros a day. That's not the face of white culture. It never has been. And we make fun of them for it. Black people, on the other hand, my opinion is your lowest denominator, let me get another, I'm not trying to be rude, hood rats, that is your focus. Your music videos placate to it. Let's get some gold teeth. Let's get some rims. Let's get some of this. Let's do this. Let's bling it out. Let's cheese it up. Let's do this like this. And it's not your educated black middle-class men that are the face of your culture.
And that, but there is a lot to do with the sociological systems with that as
Now, hold on.
Why that happened.
Now, hold on. Because of that, and you don't make fun of them, you play it up. You say there's so many that fall into this category, it's okay, we need to embrace them.
And no, I agree with you 100% with that, but I think there's a difference between that. Black people are way more close-knit to being coming from somewhere that is a lower class or from coming from the hood, per se, than someone that's upper class. That's why you have a lot of that more close-knit.
But you need to...
But you don't have a lot... You have a lot more division. No, I always joke about this.
Do you think...
Like Brad Pitt, for instance. Brad Pitt left Missouri and never turned around and came back, though.
No, he's came back multiple times.
But I mean, I'm just saying in theory. Well, he's not going to be hanging out in
Sedalia. He lives where his job is, let's be honest.
Yeah, but he's not going to be hanging out in Sedalia, Missouri.
No.
Let's just keep
it right now. Yeah.
But in general, but a black person that may come up, they still want to go back and visit their grandmothers and hang out where they came from and be accepted where they came because it's a tight-knit community.
That's fine, but that doesn't really play into what I'm talking about.
It has a place a lot to it because those people that are kind of hoodish are going to be interacting with someone that is maybe a Harvard professor because he still came from the north side of St. Louis. That influence is too close.
I think that you're trying to defend the culture.
It's not defending the culture. It's just a different way of looking
at the culture. How about this? How about as black people, you decide to start making fun of that and start
people do make fun
downplaying that and saying, "Don't be that way." Hey, listen. Like you have a daughter, right, Corey? You have a daughter. How old is your daughter? I don't need names.
I have a few daughters, but my youngest is 17, going on 18.
Okay, 17 years old. Okay.
23-year-old too.
If she brings home a kid with his pants sagging, how do you view that? I mean, that is part of black culture. That's also part of the section of black culture I'm specifically talking about.
Me as being a leader, I wouldn't look at him as being a bad person. I would try to educate him and say, pull your pants up and why you should pull your pants up. I'm not going to knock him.
No, what you should do, but see, this is my opinion.
But see, that's the difference though. There's more
community. You should knock them. You should be like, listen, if you're going to come into my house, you're going to pull your pants up and you're going to show respect to me and my family and my daughter. And that's it. Not taking them down a notch. What you're saying is I'm trying to bring you up a level.
Yeah, but you sit them down and explain to them. You can't just point your finger at them and say, don't do this and don't do that because he's not coming in there thinking he's being disrespectful by sagging. It's just our culture. I mean,
and who are you to tell me to do that? My food in my belly. You don't take care of me.
Don't come in my house and you don't see my daughter.
No, I'm
simple. That's my point. Like, I'm not trying to knock.
But I don't want to add to the problem. I want to get. I want to educate him on why not to do
it. Beautiful. Say what I said and then educate him why.
Yeah,
but that's my point. Like, you can say what I said and then just say why you're saying
it. But it's how you say it, though.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. But that's within the moment. Okay, mm-hmm. That's not a generalization across society. That's within the moment, within the specific person. You'll choose the tone and inflection to use to convey that message. Mm-hmm. But my point is that say that message, give them a reason why, and stop allowing it to be like, listen, because of what I just said, this whole hierarchy, social mm-hmm. hierarchy, and how it's the face of your culture, that's why World Star Hip Hop videos, and I'm just using that as an example, there's more than just them, but that's why they're popular. Like, they're allowing this to happen. They filter that to the United States culture. So now when you're a white guy, who the face of your culture is the middle class, looks at the situation, they go, look at the way they act. I don't want to be around people who act that way. And then you have a situation like Mike Brown pops off, and it's like, okay, verdict hasn't even come out. They're already prejudging the situation. And no, it just popped off. Over by the rougher area in Ferguson, they pop off on a whim. Pretty much. On when they just get really angry and they pop up. It just fulfills the stereotype.
But honestly, Mark, it's to the point now that I know for myself, and this they can people take this when they want.
Sure.
I don't care what white people think about me as a black person, because I conduct myself as a man, and I'm tired of trying to placate and always say what I'm supposed to act a certain way for a white person to accept me. That's something that black people need to get over in themselves.
Fair enough.
If you're gonna act better, you act better for yourself, not because white people should need to treat you better or not shoot you down or say that you can't get something.
But I think
for
that
themselves.
When we're talking about it in the context that we're talking
But when those white people you're talking about looking at it, they're doing it for them to accept me.
Sure, of course.
Not for myself, for them to be.
But when a situation like this pops off, it's mm-hmm. not on behalf of the individuals themselves. It's on behalf of the ideal that needs to sweep across the nation. It's the generalization of the stereotype that needs to be brought down a level. And that's my point. Like, yes, you saying that is great. And you being that way makes it all right for me to look at you in the eye and me and you to handle it on a man-to-man level. Do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. But when they do it, what we're seeing on TV, when we see the protesting, when we see the Knights of Terror, like, listen, hey, black guy. Hey, stop going out into the middle of the street, and some white people too. I'm not going to but hey, the majority are black because of the area. It's nothing personal. Mm-hmm. Stop going out into the street at 11:30 and yelling at the police because you're just really angry and potentially a little drunk, you know, maybe a few drinks, you know, maybe a little this, whatever. It doesn't matter because it's later at night. My point is, stop going and then provoking the police and saying things to them when they say, get out of the street. Like, I brought this up before.
But see, but then you
Corey,
get to, but see, but
when was the last time you got pulled over?
Just a few months ago.
When the cop came up and knocked on your window.
But no, before you go there, Mark.
I got to go there.
No, I've got to go there. I just want to bring up a question for people. You said the word
Chuck
provoke.
Chuck D, go ahead.
No.
Go ahead, Chuck.
No, when you said provoke, though, some people said the same things about with the Ray Rice situation about provoking, you doing something to provoke a woman. You think about that same thing when people are saying about how Ray Rice is provoking and saying that I'm provoking a cop walking in the street.
We don't
I'm provoking
know,
a cop
but
by
here's
these
the,
different things. But I'm just saying, no, we don't. But I'm just saying that
we're past
don't
that,
use
though.
The word
once
provoke.
Once the tear gas is getting ready to be broke out, we're past the we're just walking in the street section. We're just hanging out protesting. We've already kind of gone past that. We're at the he's yelling at me and they're getting ready to light a Molotov cocktail and throw it at me. Now I have to react like I'm a human being. If I took this bottle of Dr. Pepper and just chucked it at you right now, you'd get angry.
Yeah.
You'd be pissed. You'd probably come over the table or you'd throw it back at me. You'd have words for me. You'd be angry. But if I sat there and said, well, hey, man, I'm just doing my show and that's for entertainment value, you'd be like, bullcrap. You don't throw bottles at people because that ain't cool.
If you're talking about that situation, those cops egged on that situation from the beginning. It wasn't them engaging the police.
The police officers
police engaged them first.
Night one had
the dogs. They had tanks out there.
Bro.
They had riot gear like it was Vancouver.
That's night two.
Night one was just
the Quick Trip burning. They just came in flak jackets and they started trying to figure it out. And that's when it started moving up and down.
They had the dogs out there early, my man.
Flak jackets. They was in a
they was in a full
riot gear,
the first night and had dogs out there.
SWAT came. You're talking about SWAT. SWAT came, not riot gear. Riot gear was the next.
Riot gear and dogs.
It hit too fast. They didn't even know it was going to happen on the first night.
That's the point. That's the point people are making.
They were in riot gear before it was a riot.
And dogs. They had dogs out there early.
You would have to show me pictures of riot gear on night one.
Well, we would definitely put it up for
you. That would be great.
This was the visual The visual ended around 9:07.
And they had the dogs out there early.
9:07 is about
the visual, they had
1,700 people outside, and there were riot gear, and there was no riot. They were participating in a riot, and there was no riot.
Well, first off, night one was, it all started, they were having a candlelight vigil in Canfield directly.
Mm-hmm.
Then they decided to go over to the Quick Trip out of nowhere and start breaking into it.
All them people could not fit in Canfield like that. That bled.
That's my point. You see the videos of Quick Trip. It's literally about 20 people that start breaking the windows out and going in.
It bled out to Quick Trip because, just like a funeral, everybody can't, in the hood, when you got a funeral, everybody can't fit in the church. So it's a lot of people standing outside. It's a lot of people standing outside of the church. So the same thing with the visual. It's a lot of people wanting to participate in the visual, but they couldn't make it to the actual place because of the large crowd of people that nobody anticipated on being there. But when that went down, those police were in full out riot gear.
No, I remember specifically that night.
I have a video right here of two videos of the first, and it has a timestamp.
This
of
is when it, the, and the night that I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen. Starts at the Quick Trip. They burn the Quick Trip down. They're going up and down West Florissant. Literally all the way up to 270. Mm-hmm. They're breaking in the Radio Shack up there. Yeah. They broke into the Walmart up there. They got across to Hibbett Sports and all that across. Yeah, like,
it's totally
like
no
it was not just a situation where it was played out down there.
It was just
between
was
Lucas and Hunt and Chambers.
That was chaos, like, that went way out of hand and out of control.
But there wasn't riot gear that night, is what I'm saying. That was just police response.
I have the video and I have it timestamped.
Of course, there was going to be once they see the
No. I have it timestamped.
Okay, we're going to take a look at it.
He has
off the
actual.
Air.
We're going to talk about the whole thing.
No, that's
Tefpo,
fine.
Shout out to Tefpo. He documented everything from the beginning
the
to
riot
end.
The riot gear is post.
Okay, no. We're going to take a look at this video off the air, mm-hmm. In between the breaks. And when we come back, if I'm wrong, I will say that I'm wrong. It's not a problem. I don't have a problem admitting I'm wrong, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't remember it like that. But that's okay, because like in hindsight, a lot of people are going to have different views and remembrances or memories of how things went down. Listen, we're going to take a quick break here on The Cue. When we come back, more with myself, Dig Game, as well as Slowdown, former member of the St. Lunatics. We appreciate you guys listening to. If you have anything you want to say, hit us up on Facebook as well as social media. You go to thecuenow.com, click our little Twitter and Facebook links and all that. Be our friends. We can live tweet during the show and answer questions for you. We'll be back on The Cue right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Cue, of course. Mark Bland joined today by a former member of the St. Lunatics, Corey Slowdown Edwards, as well as my main man from Straight Outta Locash, Dig Game, Daryl Frierson. And we are talking about racial relations in the St. Louis area, as well as worldwide between blacks and whites, as well as other minority groups and things like that. And I was in the middle of trying to say something at the top of the hour to you, and I want to come back to that. I asked you, Corey, I was like, when was the last time that you had been approached by the police or pulled over? You said it was a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And my question I was going to ask you was specifically, when the cop came up and knocked on your window, did you roll the window down and look him in the face and go, F you, police officer?
No.
Why not?
First off, my window already down. If I'm getting pulled over, uh-huh. I already know the procedure.
Okay.
I'm trying to get my insurance. I'm trying to get my...
Right, but you're not going to say F you to the officer.
No, I'm trying to be polite as I don't know what.
And why would you not say F you to the police officer?
Because I don't want to get beat to death.
Because that would be provoking the police officer, and he would probably pull you out.
Most black men are not going to say F you to the police.
Right.
I'm talking about the hardest thugs.
No. Most normal human beings, regardless of color, are not going to say F you to the police. They're just going to do what the police officer says.
I've seen a lot of people say F you to the police.
Fair
and
enough.
They're not black.
No, definitely not black.
No, that's fine. And I respect that.
Actually, I've never heard of just walk up to a cop and just say F you. But I've seen it happen millions of times with white people.
You are down there in the middle of these protests. Things are starting to get a little heated. And you know it, they are saying F you to the police.
That's different.
Right. And they give them first warning. You're going to have to disperse or else we're going to come through and arrest you.
But they're rightfully protesting. You can protest and not...
Here's your problem.
And not do anything.
Here's your problem. Everybody wants to play this First Amendment game. Everybody wants to play the right to protest and assemble peacefully and protest and things like that. Yes. As long as you're given 1 minute to do it, 5 hours to do it, 2 days to do it, it doesn't matter. As long as you are allowed to do it at all, you facilitate the amendment. You have facilitated the ability to peacefully assemble and protest.
Yes.
Okay. Once that's done, now they let you do it all day long. They let you do it from 6 a.m. in the morning all the way until 9 p.m. at night, 10 p.m. at night, and then at 10 p.m. they go, "Hey guys, We need to disperse this area. You know, people got to work in the morning. We need to like shut this down. You can come back in the morning and protest. We're not against your ability. We've given you hours and hours to protest as much. Talk to cars and show your signs to them and everything like that. And then they say, no, we're not leaving. And then they go, well, we're going to give you another chance.
But also,
you
have also to during the civil rights movement, they told them the same things as well.
Unfortunately, the civil rights movement happened in a different time period,
but
where still, it was
but
very...
But people use that as an excuse as well, though.
Sure, of course they do. But, back then, the ability during the civil rights movement for you to walk into a cafe, Dig, and to have somebody call you the N-word,
yes,
white or black, and black people sitting around would have heard it, nobody would have reacted in a negative way because that was common culture at that time period. Like, that was acceptable by white people to say that to black people. That was acceptable for black people to hear that from white people. And even though it might not have made them happy, they still would not have created a problem or bitched about it at all. Now, in 2014, totally different story. Like, that argument of civil rights and all that is out the window because a lot of us... Corey works a regular job just like my dad works a regular job, just like my brother does, just like your brother does, your mom and dad. Like, you know, we all work just regular jobs. We're all on the same page. I could work where Corey works just as easily as Corey could work where I work type thing.
Yeah.
So I do want to I want to talk about Ron, Captain Ron.
Big Ron, as I call him.
Yes. And Ron Johnson. He is the captain of the Missouri State Highway Patrol, and he is the one who's kind of taken up the lead.
And
as we would say,
he's in a dark place. He's in
a bad place. Yeah. And the reason I think that we've got a problem with Captain Ron is because I've talked to multiple white individuals, some who are police officers, and they are looking at Captain Ron in not a negative way, but they feel that he is being kind of one-sided. They see that he has gone down, and obviously the focus of everything so far has been on West Florissant, down by the Canfield projects, or the Canfield apartments. I'm sorry, I don't mean to call them projects, but I've heard that also rattled off before, so I don't want it to get misconstrued. But by the Canfield apartment complex, as well as by that Quick Trip, you know, that's where the focus has been. So he's been down there a lot. But there have also been protests and people who have come out. In fact, this past week, we had a lady who showed up at the Quick Trip protest down there on West Florissant with a sign supporting...
That was tonight.
I know what you're saying. But my point is that we've had that, and like that person was getting dirty looks. It's not a good place for those people to be. And so like they see this one-sidedness to Ron because of where he's at, and they're not seeing him as a brother in arms to the police officer, because he is a police officer, just like the Army or the military, you know, it's a brother in arms type thing.
I think Ron is
I think he's doing a good job.
I also think he's leading by example of what other officers
should do.
Like, if West Florissant is the primary right now and Ron is right there a lot, it should be the same way on a normal day in the hood. You see it's a primary, just go make your presence felt. Get to know these guys. Say,
what
hey.
Happened to cops is walking around the neighborhood, talking, knowing Sister Mary from on the corner here, knowing that the Jenkins family that lives
Pookie,
here.
Pookie, what you doing over there, Pookie?
Yeah, come on, man. You know you're not supposed to be having this weed,
Pookie,
man. Give me this weed and throw it out.
You want me to frisk you, Pookie? Get out of here. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's no community.
It's kind of symbolic of what he's doing. He's coming down and shaking hands and getting to know people. I actually got a chance to shake his hand a few days back. My daughters took a picture with him. My daughters and a cousin took a picture with him. He was a real pleasant guy, and I got a chance to tell him that I respect him a lot and think he's doing a great job.
Now, I think that there is a piece of this, and if you're just joining us here on the show, I want people to understand we are having an honest discussion, a very deep and honest discussion. Would you guys agree? Like, we haven't pulled no punches.
No, this isn't
CNN in a town hall meeting. Okay, this isn't Chris Hayes or some of these guys over at Fox 2. You know, trying to make sure they don't come off looking racist or anything like that. Or prejudice,
like a Fox News.
Yeah, but I'm just saying. In general, we are definitely going deep on this, okay? Yeah. And I'm not a big fan of you black people right now. You too. You specifically. I'm not a big fan of you at all. You can come over to that table if you want to. I'm trained. I'm just saying. You know, this situation, this undertone of white versus black, this racial tension undertone, goes back many years. And I want everybody to get hip to this, specifically in the St. Louis area. But we have listeners in New York. We have listeners in Miami. We have listeners in Arizona. We have listeners in L.A. that listen to the Q every single week. Diehard fans. I get emails from them. So they are dealing with these types of things within their own communities in different places. But one of the things that's very prominent about St. Louis is the white flight. And that's kind of... the beginnings of the problem in the St. Louis area.
No, I would go a bit farther, a little bit farther.
No. Because you could say that. We can always take it back as far
no,
as...
No. I'm just talking about just the construction of the state and the city and county lines.
Sure. Well. I mean, we were a southern slave state during the Civil
War.
The
last state to abolish slavery as
well. But my point is that, like, we can go that far back. We don't need to. We start with white flight and the fact that at one point, St. Louis, primarily north side of St. Louis, as well as, you know, south side of St. Louis, a lot of white communities.
Yes.
And then over the years, black communities started to pop up within those sections.
Because of the ending of slavery and people moving up from the south
Time. So by the 1950s, you get your first semblance of white flight. And that's the majority of white families and older white families that were living in the north side by Crown Candy area. Mm-hmm. We're talking more city based, like legit. We're not even talking about as far as like O'Fallon Park, Penrose.
Those
were still way out in the count. Like those were out.
Yeah, that was still
away from
white,
the city pretty heavily. But the white flight starts with the downtown white people leaving and actually going into the Fergusons, the Florissants, and creating that, living there up until about the mid-90s. Now the mid-90s come around.
I say the late '80s. Late '80s.
No, because like my parents were a part of the second white flight. Like they literally.
Well, no, I would say my uncle was one of the first black families to move out to North County off Parker in '89.
Of course. Yeah, you're going to have like my oldest friend Jason Acklin. I'm 38 years old. We've been friends for 34 years. He grew up and lived on my street my entire life, and that's from the '70s.
Yeah,
like you know, like we
they're talking about the St. Charles.
Well, what happened was the St. Charles bump. And that happened because. Technically, two things. One, you had a major influx of individuals that were finding better working situations for themselves across the United States. Like, the 90s were a good time for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. They were making decent money. It wasn't expensive to live in the United States. Gas was 99 cents a gallon. Like, it was a decent time, so people were able to flourish a little bit more. But you also had the airport buyout. And the airport buyout came around 1994, 1995. That's where the airport wanted to expand. And that's where they bought up all the Kinlock and Berkeley, a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And here's what happened is you had people with $25,000 houses in Berkeley and Kinlock. They literally were given $100,000. And they were said, here's what we want you to, we'll give you $100,000 for your house so that we can build the airport through here. And then those people immediately, because they were from that area, they're like, well, I just need to move within range. So they move into Florissant. They move into Hazelwood. They move into these other areas, you know, like Spanish Lake and deeper into that. And so, therefore, all the people whose families white flighted in the 50s and their kids grew up in Florissant and Hazelwood and, you know, through that North County area in Spanish Lake, around mid-95, 96-ish, they all just got up and were like, we're going to sell our houses for about $100,000 to these people who just got $100,000. And we're going to move out to St. Charles. We're going to move out to St. Peter's and O'Fallon and stuff like that. And that's where we're at right now. And I've started to see the influx of more black families starting to move out that direction now.
I moved out there. Once the deal went down, I got a house built out in O'Fallon. People always said, hey, it's racist out there. I'm like,
It's quiet for him.
Because more so, it was from my opinion and my standpoint, that it was an old St. Charles and a new St. Charles. Mm. O'Fallon was in a new St. Charles where most of the white population in St. Charles or O'Fallon were, they call it the dot commerce.
Our new money.
Yeah, the younger money.
We like to call it North County, North County West is what we like to call it.
Them parents were my age. Well, no, I was probably like 32, and they were like 27 with the same goal as raising their kids. I actually didn't experience not one ounce of racism in O'Fallon when I was in O'Fallon. I felt safe in O'Fallon. It was one of the fastest growing
cities.
But
you were one of the few black people in the area. And the truth is that being one of the few.
No.
In O'Fallon, Missouri?
You got to check out Fort Zumwalt Sports. I mean, them kids was coming out there left and right. Them families, it was trash truck drivers.
I understand.
It was a nice presence out there.
But when you moved out to O'Fallon, what would this have been, 2001, 2? Somewhere around there?
3.
2003? Okay. That was still the equivalent of the black people that grew up with me, your Yomies, and people like that that lived in Florissant back in the mid-90s to early 90s. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was black people who lived there, but there wasn't a majority of black people. You would have been like, it's probably like 90-10, honestly. Mm-hmm. That would probably be the breakdown in O'Fallon at that time period, like 90-10 of black versus white. And so, like, you are one of few, so when they see you, there's two things that are going on. One, you're one of few. They're not going to say anything to you because they don't want to look uber racist. That's just stupid.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
I found myself,
you would be one of the only that they could see. So when people see you and they say something racist, they'll be like, okay, dude, there's only 10 of them. And you just said something to one of them. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I literally was one of the ones that like held the door open for not just white people.
Sure,
black
of course.
People.
No, we're not saying that you're a bad person at all.
I initiated like speaking. My daughters would ask on a regular, like, why you speak to everybody? I like, because we're humans and we all should speak to each other and shit, I would hold the door for each other and stuff. That was a real question that was asked by one of my daughters at the time. Like, why you speak to her? Why you holding the door for them? And it wasn't them as in white people or black people. I always hold, if it was a woman coming by, it could be a man. It's not, it could be a kid. It's no race thing. It wasn't a sexist thing. If you're walking up and I'm walking through the door, I'm going to hold the door open for you extra. And I got some,
right, it's some negative
stares.
Yeah.
I got negative stares, but I didn't use that to the next person. I still
right,
had to
of course.
The next person.
You didn't pay
even
for
it. Every 10 doors I held open, I probably got 2 negative stirs. And I continued when, if I would have took the mentality that they're saying that we have, I wouldn't have been holding the door for one. And soon somebody would have gave me a negative stir. I probably would have went off at the handle. But I try to break stereotypes and try to break the cycle of a lot of things.
One of the things I want to talk about is if it comes out that the officer's shooting was justified. Okay. I believe that many white people in the STL are never going to trust black people again. Let me predicate that. There was already racial tension, and now this would just support many of their stereotypes, and they will point to this situation as you are all loose cannons and can't be trusted to act civil and would rather not deal with you in that way again. And I'm not saying like our friendships.
Yeah.
Would make like any friendships you had prior to this are probably going to maintain because you already had built that relationship. My point is that I feel that it's going to be a much bigger, more, because if it comes out that it was justified, they're all going to turn to the situation and go, it was all for nothing. They complained prematurely, created problems, put us on a national spotlight, made our city look horrible,
but
to the world. And literally destroyed sections of our city that I'm proud of. And now I just can't trust that. I believe
they don't
that.
Care about most white people don't care about Ferguson.
Sure. but you know, it's about St. Louis at this point.
It's going to be a real slim that it's going to be justified. But at the same time, it's like the police officer has Olivia Pope on their payroll right now. Like
the crackhead Olivia Pope, because like, they've been messed up this PR.
Well, if we're going to go down the road to talk a little bit about this, let's be honest.
Why do you...
Dorian Johnson
why you release a video that has nothing to do with why you pulled this man over?
Everybody keeps talking about all these side things. Let me tell you something. The most damning evidence for this whole entire situation is really going to hinge on Dorian Johnson. And let me explain to you how this hinges on Dorian Johnson.
That's a friend, right?
He is his friend. He is standing right there and watches the entire thing go down. And he might have, the minute they popped on those TV cameras, he talks about it. He got shot twice in the back and then turned around and put his hands up. Don't shoot. And then they shot him 4 more times. And we've come to find out that that's technically not true.
No, he said his exact words were he was being shot at. He never actually said that he was shot. He was shot at.
Okay.
They haven't found out if the officer shot more than
Let me tell
shots,
you where this goes.
That was all the shots he shot.
No, fair enough. Let me tell you where this goes, though. My point is that what happens is Freeman Bosley gets a hold of this young man, former mayor of St. Louis,
yes.
Lawyer for Dorian Johnson. Mm-hmm. And he explains to Dorian, he goes, I used to run this city.
Okay. You need to be quiet.
Okay. No, he's going to be even more serious than that. He goes, we're getting ready to go sit in with the Department of Justice and you're going to give your testimony. Bro, they've been rioting and protesting and shooting tear gas at people in the streets
off of you
since you said what you said. Okay, because you're the eyewitness and your story's the one that got them to the media first. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what started this. You need to tell the truth on that Bible in there when they bring it to you. Because mm-hmm. if you do not,
you're going to jail.
You're going to go to jail for 30, 40 years on inciting civil unrest mm-hmm. and a bunch of other things. And you think that just seeing your friend die in the streets was bad? You thought that you were going to just be the witness and that you were like you got shot at sort of kind of yourself. You know what I'm saying? Because the cop is shooting that direction. No. Now, because that story and because you potentially lied to everybody, they're going to hit you with charges you don't want to touch. And these charges are going to bring you down for 30 to 40 years, 20 years out on good behavior if you're lucky. So when you get in there, homie, you tell the truth. And that's why they've held on to Dorian's testimony pretty hard. We don't know specifically what the truth is, but whatever he told the Department of Justice, I guarantee you 100%, white or black, that is the truth. Because he put the fear of God in that young man.
Yeah, no, you know,
he put the fear of God in that young man, and he's like, you're going to go to jail.
Okay. Yeah. So you're saying it could have been a 50-50 mark where it was like a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It's somewhere, wherever it was, the real truth where they said, like, it's two different sides. You saying that both of the two sides came together.
Oh, and Dorian's head, real quick, Freeman Bosley was like, yo, that third side's coming to the front right now because you don't want to go to jail for 40 years.
Because they'll figure it out.
Because they'll figure it out, bro. Yeah. Like, and I guarantee you, that's going to be the most damaging piece of evidence. Either what he said was the
truth.
And
that's what makes me wonder, though, if Eric Holder came in, though, did that testimony in front of other people was like, man, maybe we need to really... check this out even more.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they're holding a lot of pieces close to their vest. And I have a feeling that because, here's the problem.
And they don't trust the Ferguson
police.
They
haven't come out with the information on Dorian's actual Department of Justice testimony. They've kept it under lock and key. And I think it's because potentially, and this is just my opinion, everybody's got their own opinion.
Be negligence on both sides.
It's going to literally open the case up a lot more to where people are going to maybe have to question Michael Brown's decision-making that day and the things that he did. And they're going to go, yo, we're too deep into the rioting, and this has become too big of a national story, and there's way too much tension now.
Yeah, because now
to release your information, because if we release your information,
it's going
to
get worse.
The white people are going to go up in arms. The black people are going to get up in arms even worse than they already are. And this might become boom, boom, boom. Yeah,
I think a lot of his story changing, or not really changing, actually going more into detail, is like on a need-to-know basis. They asked him about what happened when they was pulled over. They didn't ask him what they did 15 minutes before that. Yeah. So when they asked him what happened at the shooting, why would I bring up
that we stole some cigarillos,
allegedly stole some cigarillos or whatnot. I still don't know which way that's going to go. But I think that's kind of why people are saying a story changed, because now from one time they asked him, he started a story off from when the police originally pulled up to him and said, hey, get the F out the street.
Right.
And then when they make him get, they make you get deeper and say, well, what were you doing 15 minutes before that?
Mm-hmm.
When there was no 911 call, allegedly, or was it? I'm still trying to figure that out. 100%.
Well, they released the actual document that states that they received a phone call about strong arm robbery.
Olivia Pope. No, I'm saying
whatever.
Because
like,
the Ferguson Marcus side, he said he's willing to put up to testify that he didn't call the police.
Yeah,
so,
but he also owns a store in the area where that happened, it's the catalyst for the video, and his entire clientele is based off of what? People who are protesting right now.
But he doesn't want to lose business. But that's not good for Darren Wilson if he's willing to testify to that, though. That doesn't look good for him.
We're going
to
find out.
Because he can go to jail for
as well, just like Dorian could.
So if they got evidence saying that he made the 911 call, and he's saying, I'm going to testify saying I didn't make the 911 call, it's a lose-lose situation.
Well, here's the thing. We all want to keep playing this game of maybe is and what ifs and stuff like that, but either the call was made or it wasn't. They either have audio of it or they don't. There is no in between. They just haven't released it yet.
When he originally pulled up on him, he would have pulled up with his cherries on and would have said instead of
There is no doubt in the discussion at all that the original discussion with the two young men was they were blocking traffic and that he wanted them to get out of the way. There was no pulling up about cherries or a strong arm robbery or anything like that. What you have is an 18-year-old young man who knows he just did a strong arm robbery along with a couple of his buddies, including the one walking right next to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's scared because he's 18. And when the cops roll up, he's thinking, yo, they're coming after us for this.
For the robbery.
And the truth is Darren Wilson sitting in the car going, these dudes are in the street. I just need to get them out of the street. You guys need to get over there. And the truth is that in that area, in those apartments, this is a common everyday occurrence that a police car will probably pull through there, talk to some people, and move on out. So if you see these two young men talking to the police in any form or fashion, you're watering your like plants or something, you'll see it and you'll just probably turn right back around. It's not until you'll hear some fracas or some audio or something that's out of the ordinary that you'll turn around. By that time, you're 20 seconds too late to what actually happened or the start of what happened. You see what I'm saying?
Was he pulled in the car?
And you're seeing him run away or whatever, and then you're seeing them face off and getting shot. Like, you're not seeing that most important piece, which is that first 20 to 30 seconds.
That's where the bash cams are come in at. Because you don't know if
what's going on.
He was yanked into the car.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will.
Or if he reached in the car and tried to grab his arm.
And even still, though, at the end of the day, even if he – why did gunplay have to come involved, period, though? That's more of the issue in itself. Not because people are trying to justify the fact that he put out
a gun. Well, you talked about the – well, we don't have much time, but you talked about the shooting with the guy with the knife. We saw the – all three of us have seen the video. He screams to the officers, shoot me now, shoot me, shoot me. He's saying it to him, and eventually karma's going to catch you, bro.
But who are you to judge, though? It's not you to judge. That's only the man above to judge that by my karma, though.
But, okay, well, if you want to go down that road, then here you go. Everybody's lot in life is already pre-written.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And that was his lot in life. That was supposed to happen. And as much as it's horrible,
someone still has to pay the price for it.
But why? You know, that's funny. We're talking about a religious aspect now. Yeah. That's interesting. Why should have, not to say that it's right or wrong, why should someone have to pay? If we're willing to have religious leaders in our culture that teach us on a week-to-week basis that God has a predestined plan for all of us.
I mean, I'm not
it's
a
already
religious
written
person,
in the
though,
book.
So,
if Mike, not to, no, I'm not knocking Mike Brown, so. I'm not saying that this is right, but if Mike's lot in life was to get shot down in the street by that officer that
day.
So,
you could say any murder then and just let everything.
Exactly.
Just, no, so
exactly.
Okay, so you're saying let every murder just ride and let every robbery just ride.
I'm
then,
not
right?
saying it's proper or it's but right, then, but I'm, it's I'm, potential
look,
if you're going to you're gonna argue this piece, you got to argue
that. I'm not a religious person by four, but. What we're going to talk about it as far as, like, you got the devil and, I mean...
You
got
okay, me, hold that hold that thought. I want you to hold that thought. We're gonna take a quick break here on the queue. When we come back here on 1380 The X, 1420 WRNI, more with Corey Slowdown Edwards, Daryl Frierson, and we're going to talk more about racial tensions, white-black racism and everything else in the United States in 2014 when we come back here on the queue. Welcome back to the queue. Mark Bland, Slowdown, as well as Daryl Frierson joining me today here on 1380 The X, 1420 WINI. As well as you can check us out every single week, Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Standard Time on 1420 WINI. That's newstalk1420.com. As well as Sunday afternoons, 1 till 3 p.m. Central Standard Time on 1380 The X and 1380 AM in the St. Louis area. And that's 1380thex.com where you can find that. We're talking about racial tensions. We're talking a little bit about Ferguson and the Michael Brown case. And I've got a list here, guys. I've got a list here that I feel is really interesting. We were going to go down the religious angle. Like, I kind of brought something. It's kind of a big can of worms when we're already in this can of worms. You know what I'm saying? It's like the Western Front versus the beaches of Normandy. We can't fight two battles of that magnitude at the same time. So we might have to bring you two back in on a different show to discuss religious aspects of how things play out. And by the way, I'm sure there's a lot of black people out there listening to the show that are probably like, that prejudice SOB Mark Bland is such a POS. You know what I'm saying? And that's fine. I respect that. If you'd like to email me, mark@theqnow.com. That's my email address. As well, if you want to send Daryl, go ahead.
Yeah,
send Daryl. If you want to be passive aggressive like most black people are with their racism and my beliefs, you can send it to Daryl. He'll let me know. Go ahead. What's
StraightOLC@gmail.com.
There it is. And Corey, he's just staying out of it. He's just like, I got my own problems at home.
My inbox already going crazy.
Already going crazy. Which, by the way, you're working with the artist Skittles, right?
Yeah, I've been working with Skittles about 6-7 years now.
And she's a fantastic talent out of the St. Louis area.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how she gets so much play on MTV and not on local radio, but that's a whole nother topic.
Yeah, that's a different topic. We don't need, if people want to check out Skittles, they can just search her up in Google.
SKKIDALZ.
Yeah, she's good. She's a good MC too.
There it is. Yeah. There it is. Okay, 12 ways whites can be allies to black people.
Who made this?
Doesn't matter. this is an interesting.
I want to know what the source of this.
I want to say this is from Reason.com or Vox.com. One of those two websites for some reason.
Okay.
12 ways whites can be allies to blacks.
I don't like lists like this.
No. This is going to be good. We're going to discuss this down, okay? One, learn about the racialized history of Ferguson and how it reflects the racialized history of America. That's stupid. In my opinion, as a person from the Ferguson-Florissant School District, born and raised in that area, have hung out in Ferguson hundreds upon hundreds. Dude, the day Michael Brown was killed, that night, at Ferguson Brewery Company, 3 blocks from the police station, 20th High School reunion. That's my point, like this, which, by the way, I told that story. I told the story on the show last time. I'll briefly tell it real quick. We're hanging out outside. It's me, 3 other white people, and a black gentleman by the name of Reggie Wilkes, a friend of mine. They decide to do a candlelight vigil walk down to the police station.
Right.
Night of the death. Not the next night, but the night of the death. Before the riots, before everything. As they're walking by, it's about 80 black people. The older ones are holding candles. They're humming and they're singing, or, you know, they're kind of chanting whatever they're chanting. There's about 15 to 20, maybe 30 young black adults under the age of 25, guaranteed, jumping up and down, very, very hostile, very angry. They come around the corner and they go, "We need to kill all the whites just like those people," and pointed right at us. With that, Reggie turns around. And by the way, at this point, I did not know Michael Brown was shot or killed. I had no idea at this point.
You didn't know
that
what
had happened
going on.
At 11 a.m. and it's 8 p.m. or 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night, and I have no idea that this had even happened. I'd been like out of the loop all day long, and so like Reggie's like, "Y'all need to move on with that stuff," like that, and then he turned right to us and goes, "You guys need to shut up. Don't say a single word." And like I understand, but yeah. I had no idea what was going on and stuff like that. That's how hot that got. That got hot real quick, and to like the racialization in history of Ferguson and how that placates. Or plays out to America in general. I don't think that there's anything there.
Because I mean, there is something there, though, but I wouldn't say that's a reason.
There's no way that by learning about the history of racialization in Ferguson, you're going to see the overall United States. Like, there's
yeah, you can definitely can though.
No, I don't think
because
so.
Because there's a lot of places that are just like Ferguson that's all over the
but
country.
But you're not going to find the information out of Ferguson the way you think.
I mean, you're looking at
now
it
you will because of the 10 days of protesting and stuff and all the news
oh,
stories.
Oh, you're talking about from... But I mean, that's when they wrote it from, though. They wrote it from this point of all the riots.
Potentially. Yeah. I'll give them credence on that one. Number two, reject he was a good kid or he was a criminal narrative and lift up the Black Lives Matter narrative.
Okay. Okay.
Is that cool?
Cool with that.
Black lives do matter.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Okay.
100%.
Use words that speak the truth about disempowerment, oppression, disinvestment, and racism that are rampant in our communities. That's kind of what we're doing here.
Yeah.
We're talking about racism. We're talking about the deep-seated issues between blacks and whites in the St. Louis area as well as across the nation.
And I don't think most people want to talk about that, though, black or white. Because a lot of black people benefit from that.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think there's any show in the United States of America over the next 2 to 3 weeks at all. Minus the potential for Oprah to make a move, then it's going to get as deep.
She's
going to
make a move, though.
To get as deep as we are right now.
Ayanna Van Zandt
for as long as we're getting deep. Like, we are getting deep.
Yeah.
Okay? Number five. Number four. Understand the modern forms of race oppression and slavery and how they are intertwined with policing, the courts, and the prison industrial complex. Okay.
That's pretty heavy.
That's a lot to take on.
But I mean, that's pretty heavy, though. I mean, I've read into a lot of that, and that takes a while. That's not something somebody's going
to
learn.
Right. You're not going to get that easy, and you're going to have to get
that's
pretty
a class.
Deep. You're going to have to find specific court
that's a
cases
class.
And things like that.
That's
yeah.
a class.
Examine the interplay between poverty and racial equity. Okay, fine, fair enough. You know, there is, but then that also goes back into the social hierarchy aspect that I was talking about. You know, you have these people, the face of white culture at this level, the face of black culture is at this level, even though there are people that run at this level for black culture, but that inequality is kind of by natural, like the reason why that lower hierarchy exists on the black side is because the blacks allow it to exist and continue to play it up via videos, movies, think whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Which I disagree with.
No, because you have very popular movies like Friday, specifically takes...
You have Scarface.
But you have...
You have Goodfellas. You have Die Hard.
American
you have
Hustle.
Commando. You can't... One hand watch...
Friday takes the idea of black culture in the projects of South Central LA on a one-day period, okay? And plays up all the stereotypes.
Okay. Grandma's
the
boy.
The Debo's.
They plays up all the white guys smoking weed all day stereotypes. So, I mean, I'm just saying that as every example you bring up, I can bring up five more of the movies because there's more white movies made than black movies.
Half-baked.
But if they're the only movies that are getting popular out of
but
your
that's
culture.
But that's a Hollywood thing as well. You have to look at how much money Hollywood makes off. Actually, some white
sure.
people want to see black people only in those positions. Because let's be honest. Hollywood is about money.
Oh, we're going to finally be honest here after 2 hours? Good job.
No. I mean, I
way
know people
go.
Talk about Hollywood. Hollywood is about money. And when it comes to that money, they most people that are going to come out to see a movie are going to be, generally is going to be a white audience. Unless it's a Tyler Perry
oh,
movie.
Oh, Lord. That's Tyler Perry.
Unless it's Tyler Perry.
It's ridiculous. You guys have actors. You have people that are quality. You got guys like Forrest Whitaker winning Academy Awards.
Right. I mean, a high-paid actor is a black man.
Samuel L. Jackson.
He's made the most money in the history of movies. Yeah.
But right now, like, he's
Denzel, I think, might be the highest paid actor, I think, right now, though.
No,
I think it's George Clooney. I think he's the highest paid actor.
Samuel Jackson did the contract with all the
Marvel movies. He did, that's right, 30 million a year.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's good. Yeah,
all right, let me get back to my list here. Number six, diversify your media. Okay, fine.
Hold on. Before that was Will Smith and Marlon Lawrence did the 4th of July Man. Yeah. So for the last few years, the highest paid actor was Black, but society only wants
to see us on ESPN, MTV, and VH1 in general. That's just one of my things.
Well, you know, let's be honest. You know, black culture doesn't really push themselves to want to get into movies either.
I mean, it's not like there's a lot of black people going out of their way getting talked to
in schools and elementary schools in different places about you could become an actor and become really well at it. Like, that's not happening.
Yeah,
that does happen in white culture. No, that doesn't. The majority of things focused in black culture are, hey, you can get out of the projects by playing basketball really well, by playing football really well.
I'll say entertainment overall, period, though. Acting as well.
Or music. I don't think acting is a part of that.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Definitely,
I disagree.
Yeah, Ice Cube, highly promoted when he go around speaking engagements.
Yeah, I would say entertainment as a whole.
Ice Cube fell into it. Music was his first. Yeah. Do you see my point?
I would say entertainment overall.
Most of the Will Smith, high paid actor, and he fell into it because of the music.
Let me get back to my list here.
Mm-hmm.
Adhere to the number seven. Adhere to the philosophy of nonviolence as you resist racism and oppression. Okay, I think that that's a good idea across the board. I think that we should be cooler heads prevail and try to talk things out as opposed to just like run in, shoot, and ask questions later. Yeah. I think that that's a much better way to be. Mm-hmm. Number eight, find support from fellow white allies. Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess I don't understand. Like there's guys like me who understand both sides of culture,
mm-hmm.
but like, I'm not that guy who's going to sit there and go, it's okay for you to blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm saying? I'll be the one to kind of let you know, there's a pothole. Don't do that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I'm not going to sit there and like hold your hand. Number nine, if you're a person of faith, look to your scriptures or other holy text for guidance. Okay, that's kind of weird. Like, you know, these are things, like I said, this is the list of 12 ways whites can be allies to blacks. I understand that there is a strong religious culture
mm-hmm.
to black people.
Not just black people, just America, period.
In general.
Yeah, America, period.
But it does strong, it's very strong in black, definitely. In the black culture.
Yeah.
And I feel that, yeah, just because you find faith in scriptures and the holy, you know, the holy texts and things like that, can that be helpful? Of course. I think it's just good morals. Like, it just comes down to common sense. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff that's in the Bible is common sense.
Yeah.
It's like, don't kill someone because it's bad. Oh, okay. All right, cool. Like, that's common sense.
I agree with that. You don't need anybody to teach you that not to kill.
Yeah, exactly. Don't be afraid to be unpopular. Now, I think this is very important. If you're going to try to be open-minded to other cultures, you're going to find, like tonight, this show, today, you're listening to the show. There are people that are seething at the things I've said because they are just not going to look past the fact that I'm a white syndicated radio show host speaking so openly to two black gentlemen the way I have been. They're going to not see past that. That's understandable. I know that walking into this. I knew that walking into this, I was going to catch some flack. But it needed to happen because way too many people are going into the media as white people and they're not getting to the crux and they're not talking about these things with black people. They're just not doing it. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be stated. It needs to be opened up.
But I'll say this though, Mark. There's a difference between having a healthy conversation and having, as I say, Shea Whitey, just talking down to, hey, Negroes, this is what you need to be doing.
Sure.
And that's when people, it's like, I guess it's a thin line because you have some people that'll be like, well, this is what black people need to do. And that's when you get yourself in trouble.
And I don't think we've done that here.
No. But I'm
today,
saying,
today on this show, I think that we've been very even with me presenting my dialogue, you presenting your dialogue. I don't think that we've smashed it down. I think we've presented reasons why we say what we're saying.
But some people think they're edgy just because they want to tell black folks how they need to be acting. And they think, oh, well, I'm edgy and I'm unpopular because I want to tell black
people. By the way, I need you to tie your shoes next time you come into my studio. Thanks. Number 11, be proactive in your own community. And number 12, don't give up. And I think that those are good things. You know, you don't give up. Try to maintain some semblance.
Yes, sir. I have another one. Try to differentiate the difference between different types of black people. I think that's the biggest
issue. I think that there is a problem with that, though, in black culture. I don't think there's a lot of diversity in black culture.
Oh,
there is
a whole bunch.
But because it's, you can it's even not look talked at, about.
The white flight wouldn't have happened in North County if they saw a couple of regular black people moving in and not think that these black people were the
I'm
the
not
hooligans.
Saying it doesn't exist. What I'm saying is I don't think it's played up and talked about as much in black culture. The diversity is not. I think that there is this type of individual follows this type of morale. We see it every day. That's who they are.
Same thing could be said about white people, though.
Sure, but really, can it?
Because you have 100%. Because 100%. If you look at everything that showed up about white people, though, they're always happy. They're always they're supposed to be all have money.
We know that there's all those things. Hold on. We know that there are rich black people.
Yeah,
but white people think that there are very few.
But there's a lot.
Is there a lot of black people that are rich?
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%, like really rich?
Rich or wealthy?
That's a different level. Rich and wealthy are two different things.
No, I'm talking about rich. Wealthy is a totally different level.
I'm talking about people that's wealthy.
Yeah.
But
I'm talking about rich.
It's a nice amount.
Well off. I'm talking about $80,000 to $100,000 a year jobs, constantly taken care of. Like, is there?
I wouldn't consider that rich.
I definitely wouldn't consider that as rich.
Okay.
I would say
when you get up to that higher levels, I think it's almost equal. You're talking about like over $500,000.
I don't think anybody here, though, I think when you start making $500,000 a year, I think you're getting into the wealthy range because by the time 5 years goes by, you've made $2.5
million.
No, you're talking about a lot of money.
I don't know if he's thinking about the same thing. Wealth. I'm thinking wealth is generational.
Yeah, it's generational. Your great, great, great. Okay, LeBron James is. I can't really say
he's
LeBron
not even wealthy
James
either,
because
though.
The owner of the Clippers. That's what wealthy. You consider wealthy.
Only person that may be wealthy is Oprah. That truly is wealthy.
Oh, no. You got, what's his name here?
Bob Johnson.
Here in St. Louis. David, the guy who runs Worldwide Technology.
Oh, yeah, David Stewart.
David Stewart. Very wealthy.
Yeah, yeah.
Very
okay,
wealthy.
Yeah, he's wealthy, yes, too. Yes. Because he got generational wealth. He's got generational wealth.
Robert's brother could be considered.
No, they could be considered wealthy. Yeah. No, but my point is that there are less on the black side than there are on the white.
Oh, yeah,
that's
but
just
there's
true.
There's more.
Yeah,
that's
right. Got to hear a story.
I want to bring up a story real quick because I think this is very interesting. Okay. Sixth grade teacher at Brantley Elementary School in Dallas County, Alabama, is now on administrative leave after students were instructed to reenact the August 9th shooting death of Michael Brown. That's right. Brown, 18, was fatally shot by Ferguson, Missouri police officer. The unarmed black man's death by a white police officer has sparked protests and riots in the St. Louis suburb and around the country. An investigation is being conducted by the Dallas County School System after a concerned parent of one of the students complained about the class assignment. It was an assignment. Yes. The teacher's name.
How old were these kids again?
This is, it says elementary school. That's sixth grade.
Yeah, that's too heavy for sixth grade.
The teacher's name has not been released. WSFA 12 News has a crew in Dallas County and will have more details as this progresses. But this just happened this week. They're reenacting sixth graders. Like a teacher thought it was okay to reenact the shooting death of a young man.
I don't think it should be for sixth graders.
Problem I have with this. It's not good that they did this, but I want to know the context and way they thought they should. Like, what conversation came up between teachers that they were like, I think that we should reenact the shooting death of that young man. Like, in their minds, they really had a good reason in their own minds. We all probably think it's a crap reason. Yeah. But in their minds, they thought it was a great reason why they should attempt this at all. And so I want to know what that reason is, because I feel like that's so odd. You know what I'm saying?
That's real odd. That's real odd.
Oh man, guys, this has been a heavy episode of this show. I want to rant on something real quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
2 months ago, black people were pouring ice buckets of water over their head, calling it the ice water challenge. Okay, and then that led to the boiling water, where a couple of them put the videos up where they poured boiling water and burned the crap out of their brother or whatever it was. Horrible. And that led to the fire challenge, famous pour the alcohol on them.
How many videos was that of the hot water challenge?
Not very many. I would say they learned very quickly after watching the guy in writhing pain off the first couple. They're like, yeah, we're not going to do that one. That looks painful. But then they went to the fire challenge. Okay, now, the ALS has now taken up the ice bucket challenge, which Urban Culture started 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. Now they've taken it up to like bring attention to ALS. I see the purpose for it. I wish we had there. If you imagine this, and this is just me off the top of my head. Now I know that they're making a lot of money off of this and it's helping ALS, but imagine the first couple of days of this. Okay. Cause the original videos were pour ice water over the top of your head or pay $100 to the ALS.
Right.
If you're a person who's got ALS and you see that, you're like, these white people are so against me finding a cure for the disease that is slowly killing them. They would rather pour water on their heads than send $10 my way.
But you're supposed to donate money as well.
Now,
right?
Now.
Oh,
I'm talking about at first it was not.
Oh,
and now
really?
It has become sending $10 instead of sending in $100.
Rules changed.
Yeah, the rules changed because they were like, can you imagine that though? Like the people are looking, they're like, oh my God. They are just so cheap as human beings. They
bring
are
out
just,
that ice bucket.
They will just waste ice on the water on the ground. And then there's the meme of the little black kid looking at the white woman going, you saying they throw fresh water over the top of their heads? I got to move to St. Louis. Like, that's just ridiculous to me. But, you know, if you can, I've been challenged like 30 different times through emails and stuff. I'm thinking two things. I'm thinking either I go to the swimming pool. Right, you know the ones that have the big bucket on the top, and then just stand under the bucket and let it dump me.
A sports anchor did that.
Oh, did he?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just seen that like 2 days ago.
He sucks. I don't like him.
That was a she.
I don't like her either.
It was a she. She did.
Doesn't matter.
It was a theme park right around the corner from, and she went and did that exact thing.
The next thing I want to talk about before we get out of here is this is not a police state we're in right now. We keep talking about the police state. The conservatives have been up in arms about the police state, the militarization of the police against the people. I've said this on the show before. I've talked about it tonight. We're going to talk about it one more time. It's only an area that's a 1 mile stretch of West Florissant that has police presence on both ends and somewhat into the neighborhoods on the sides. And that's it. It's contained mainly to there. They haven't sieged tanks around the 3 million people that live in St. Louis, around the metro area. We don't have to show badges to get into the city of St. Louis, South County, North County, East St. Louis, over the bridges into St. Louis. Like, it's not like that. This isn't a police state because people are reacting to other people wiling out. That's a good way to say it. Like, the people in the protests are angry. They're not happy. They're going to provoke and engage with the police. The police are going to react.
I would say the minority of the protesters. Let's keep that in mind. Most of the protesters down there are percentage.
There is going to be engagement. And on both sides, they're going to do what they do. This side's going to not like they're being engaged. That side's not going to like the engagement. And they're going to meet at the head in the middle. Like it's just going to happen.
Yeah, and the tank's going to win.
And the tank's going to win, man. The last thing I want to talk about is... did you guys see the video of the journalist getting his head cut off?
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
That is out of control. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to be very careful in the world. This situation with ISIL, ISIS, whatever you want to call them, it doesn't matter. It was called ISIL. It was called ISIS. Now it's just the Islamic State. Like, it doesn't matter. They have put together some slick videos. And the slick video that they put out of that guy getting his head cut off, it was 4 to 5 minutes long, perfect for YouTube, good production quality. Like, it is packaged to let them know we're serious.
And the guy
speaking on it is, like, British. He speaks clearly, and he's the one who cuts the guy's head off. Like, it's not just some chumps doing this behind, like, a project over in the middle of Israel or Iraq or whatever. This is, hey, we're staging it. And at the end of that video, he said, Barack Obama, if you don't do this, we're cutting this dude's head off. And they show the guy, Sotoff is his name. Well, Barack Obama went and said this past week, we are not going to engage with these terrorists. We're going to stay the course, and we're going to keep taking the fight to them.
Because the guy...
Sotoff's going to get his head cut off now.
So the guy that sawed his head off is going to get his head cut off next. So he had to saw the guy...
No. It was a member of ISIS sawed off the...
Right.
And then he brought another...
That
guy is now up to get his head cut off. Yeah. This is getting deep, guys. This is getting deep. They're just chopping people's heads off. And they're doing it live on video, and they're packaging it so that it can be easily disseminated through YouTube, sent out very quickly, because 5 minutes is not a lot of time out of your life to watch a video. If it's 15 to 20 minutes long, you're going to be like, I just want to see the part where this is going crazy. 5 minutes, you'll listen to everything that they say, and then you'll be like, oh my God, this is crazy. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say thank you to Slow Down, former member of the St. Lunatics, for being here today. Corey, I appreciate you coming in and talking with us about racial tensions and race relations in the United States in 2014.
Anytime.
Dig Game, straight out of Low Cash, is your podcast. Where can they find that?
They can go to straightolc.podbean.com, or they can get it for free on iTunes, or Stitcher Radio, or TuneIn app.
All right. Well, I want to say thank you so much yourself on the show. I appreciate it. I hope that with this show, ladies and gentlemen, we were able to have a much deeper, more pointed conversation with both viewpoints being presented here. Me playing devil's advocate at times. And yes, there was some prejudice in the show. There was some slight hints of racism that did come out in discussion. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that we're not grown men who can't have an honest discussion about these things in 2014 and try to open this can of worms and try to heal some of this stuff, because that's the most important thing. We're not going to get anywhere unless we communicate. Yeah. And I think both of you gentlemen can agree.
Yeah, no, most definitely.
From relationships to the man walking down the street.
Yeah,
everything. That's right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for us here on The Q. Thank you so much to RazorSharpDigital.com for all your SEM and SEO digital marketing, 1380TheX and 1420WYNI. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Go to TheQ.com. You can click the social media links to find us on the main page. That's going to do it for us here on The Q. Thanks to these two gentlemen. We will see you next time on the show.
Solutions left, but on God. Trying to block my shots just ain't gonna happen, so don't try. Every time I get on this microphone, I like to spit. And get hit up after hit. This penmanship is so legit. I can't be quipped like a prophylactic. Now they riding bitch type. Styling only suckers out here trying to buy their bitch. Now they rich.